8:45, Joseph Yoon, the United States Special Representative for North Korea Policy, has announced his retirement. He decided to retire right at the end of the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics, as it happens. And we got this quote from the last few days. It was actually February 27th. This quote was delivered from Michael Fuchs, a former Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs at the State Department. Regardless of what Yoon's reasons are, it is very clear that this administration, and in particular the White House, does not prioritize diplomacy and foreign policy in writ large and on North Korea in particular. What really is concerning is the language that we've been hearing out of National Security Advisor McMaster and President Trump and others at the White House about the possibility of military action. Without a doubt, this is a huge loss for the State Department and our policy on North Korea. Professor An Jun-sung, Graduate School of International Studies of Yonsei University, is back with us for this week's quotes. Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be back.
Yeah, well, you had yourself a break during the Olympics. The Olympics served as a sort of a point of change for many different people in different positions. But for Joseph Yoon, why did he decide to retire? Do we know?
Well, it's speculation only at this point, but at this time. But the, before we talk about, you know, what he did, I'm just talking about who he is, right? He's the, he's U.S. Special Representative for North Korea Policy, and he will retire today, March 2nd, in Eastern Standard Time, so, right? That's about 14 hours different from Washington, D.C. And he was born in Seoul, actually, 1954, so it made him about 64 years old. So it's about time to retire, but the problem was that, his very interesting background. His family went to U.S. in 1963 while his father worked for the WHO. So his father is a medical doctor. And he was Korean-American, right? He actually born in Seoul. So he kind of have a strong tie to his motherland. I guess that make him maybe soft to Donald Trump. How they think about, you know, he takes hard line, but seems like he didn't like it. So basically what happened was Mr. Yoon was thinking about that, the Trump is not really listening to him for the bilateral negotiation with North Korea. I guess that's the problem. He left.
But when we try and assess that why question, is there a link, for example, do you think, between Yoon's retirement and Victor Cha's withdrawal from the nomination for U.S. ambassador to South Korea last month?
So I think it's really it's hard to tell really what really happening in the, there, but the speculation and things like what happened was Victor Cha is kind of a surprise to me because he's very famous. He's, he's been doing very active on political, also academically also, but I was surprised about what happened to Victor Cha. I mean, we talk about the bloody nose strategy, but he was publicly disagrees with the, White House, policy on against North Korea. Also, and it this show that his departure seems like that Donald Trump sending a message to Kim Jong-un, say, we'll take a very strong, firm position against you, right? I think that's the kind of sending political message to Pyongyang, right?
Will it have a big change then in current U.S. foreign policy on North Korea?
Well, it's an interesting question because if you ask the U.S. government side, they say no change. But from the non-U.S. government position, say, I think there will be some change because that I think the Yoon was the one who tried to mitigate. I mean, it's kind of arbitrate between, agree, try to get some middle ground between the, the Trump and then Kim Jong-un some way. But now Yoon is leaving soon, right, later today, and there's nobody will stop him, saying, you shouldn't be, doing this.
But are there any suggestions that their voices were being heard anyway?
I think we have to send some credit for the, Joseph Yoon, because he was the one who went to Pyongyang and, took American student, right? So, I mean, he did what he had to do.
Otto Wombe.
Yeah, and the problem was that maybe they did not, the White House do not appreciate him. So I guess he was kind of 64-year-old, if you not listen to me, what I'm doing here, right, I guess.
It's certainly worrying for those who are hoping for moderate voices to prevail in the administration. But as I said, it seems to me like what's really holding us back from that bloody nose strategy is the fear that we could trigger a major war, especially as Russia's just released an animation showing a possible attack on Florida. And I'm sure Russia would have plenty to say if the U.S. decided to carry out a so-called bloody nose strategy.
Yeah, I guess. But sometimes there happens some unexpected result, right? I guess I'm just wondering why the Russian did it, because the pressure is on North Korea, not the Russia, right?
Well, I mean, Russia feels that it's under threat from U.S. anti-missile systems across the world. And we know Vladimir Putin's been saying that for years, and we know Russia wasn't happy about Thad, just as China wasn't happy about Thad, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess, but still, I guess, it depends on, I think it's really perspective how you see it, right? Because they think the U.S. got invaded any country, well, they would say they were seriously, like North Korea, but in reality, I don't know really what happened, because between the U.S. and North Korea, there's an imbalance of power. I mean, in size and the military capability, but U.S. and China is really much stronger than North Korea. I mean, they don't have
to
worry about it too much.
But we can see complications play out in the Syria situation right now, like the power that Russia has in this situation. Like, Russia is able to decide effectively whether humanitarian aid can reach civilians in Damascus's suburbs. It's just very concerning that one outside country can wield that much power. And you can imagine how much greater that would be over a situation like North Korea. Yeah. One other area that we want to reflect on today is Japan. There's been a kind of trade dispute building between South Korea and Japan. Yeah. And Ken Saito, Japan's Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, has had this to say. Japan will respond accordingly so that our position will be accepted by the World Trade Organization appellate body as well. We will also call on South Korea to sincerely and promptly correct their import ban measures. So this is after the WTO already ruled that South Korea should lift those import bans post-Fukushima disaster.
Yeah, that's DS-495, the case number, and the response is Korea. But the WTO panel is just saying that initial measure were justified in 2011, but the additional ban, which was imposed in 2013, was not justified. It's because the main reason that in order for the respondent on this kind of case, respondent have to show that their measure was maintained with sufficient scientific evidence. But the problem is that, legally speaking, what is sufficient, right? That's very hard to prove it. And according to the Korean news media and the government, the Korean government really didn't really get any sufficient information. They didn't even send their official report to the WTO. Right, that's the problem.
If we lose the appeal from this side, does South Korea then have to lift all bans on Fukushima products?
Actually, not really. There's kind of international organization, kind of perspective, because they cannot enforce. They cannot make any member state to change their domestic law regulation against their will. So what happened was the WTO gave a right to retaliate if any country disagreed to, comply with the WTO rulings. And the problem is it will take time, at least 1 or 2 years, to get anything retaliation done. And plus, there's... All they can get from is the compensation, actually. You cannot make them country change their law against their will, but they will get compensated. That's the issue about the WTO rules.
Should this ban be in place, though, at all? Forget the dispute with Japan. As a basic health point of view, is there any suggestion that we need to be concerned about these products?
Because I recently went to Tokyo and I had a sushi there. So it depends on perspective, I think we need some kind of bans, because that we're not sure what really happening. Even the Japanese people concerned about their safety and seafood about in the Fukushima area, some of the neighboring prefectures as well. So I guess we need the ban in as general rule, but I think we pay more attention to the process, what is happening. Right.
I mean, it's not just South Korea, though. I mean, it could be easy to just say, well, Seoul is using this as an opportunity to kind of rub salt in wounds that already exist between Seoul and Tokyo. But the European Parliament also, if you go back to stories emerging last year, warned against easing health controls imposed on food products imported from Fukushima. And that just places that doubt in your mind. But should ultimately consumers be allowed to make the choice?
This is a very good point. I think in order to answer that question, so you have to see why Japanese government picked South Korea only, because as a respondent, because they know, like, I think it's over 20 countries, you know, imposing the, I mean, import ban against the Fukushima product and neighboring, you know, prefectures. So I guess they will pick one country, perhaps Korea, and just, you know, they try to send message to other countries, because we call the Japanese government won against any member state, they can enforce the same measure against the rest of the members. So that's the thing. It's like they don't care about how different countries apply different rules. They want to get something favorable decision from WTO, and using that favorable decision to force other country to do.
Yeah. Well, in the last few hours, it's emerged that Fukushima's famous flounder fish will be exported for the first time since the nuclear disaster. And in fact, levels of radioactive cesium in all the 25,000 types of marine products caught off Fukushima have been within safety levels since 2015. But there will always be some who will doubt that. And who's measuring this? Can they really measure all of the products? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
To you, Professor Eun Jin Song. That's this week's Quotes.